You're listening to Wholesaling Inc., episode number 1383.
And so what we like to do is we like to look at what is all the offline marketing you're doing, including texting, cold calling, everything. And what may someone go to the internet to search to find you or to see if you're legit? It's all the phone numbers you're using. It's your company name. It's anything that's in there. And then literally go to Google and type that into Google. Type in your company name plus your city or the phone numbers you're using and see what comes up.
This is game-changing information guaranteed to raise your real estate wholesaling business with actionable steps you can take immediately to navigate the ins and outs of wholesaling and start making money today. Join us as we put our guests in the hot seat and dive deep to dissect their strategies for success to enable you to duplicate their results. You're listening to Wholesaling Inc., the only show dedicated to making you a fortune in wholesaling.
Building a wholesaling real estate business has nothing to do with real estate. It is a sales and marketing business. Actually, it's a marketing and sales business, but that's how we start this out. That doesn't mean that you can't go out there and find unbelievable opportunities to add to your portfolio. Doesn't mean that you can't find unbelievable opportunities to fix and flip if you've got a creative mind and you want to do something special and you want that joy and that pride of driving by a property that used to look terrible and now looks just absolutely brilliant. It looks beautiful, right? But when we're starting out, when we're building this business, when we understand that we can build a machine that's going to source us all the best opportunities for us to add to our asset column, when we really focus on understanding that it's about the marketing and the sales, we can get really clear and we don't get distracted and we can focus. And that's why I am so excited about this podcast, because the gentleman that I am going to be having a conversation with, listen to this. In the last 5 years, because of his websites, 150,000 deals done, almost $2 billion of income have flowed through these websites. I'm sure you already know who I'm going to introduce. It's my pleasure to introduce Trevor Mock with Carrot.com. Carrot. Websites, dude. Carrot, everything, right?
I'm pumped to be here again, man. We were here, I was here, shoot, 6 months ago, a year ago.
Yep.
Had a chance to finally see this spot. And I have so admired the way that you show up to every call you're on. Mm-hmm. Every time, so we talked right before this, you were on the Carrot Cast. And every time you get off, my team texts me and they're like, dude, Brent brings the energy.
Yeah.
So appreciate you, man, big time.
Well, I love this business. Listen, wholesaling changed my whole life.
Yep.
You know, I always thought that it was all about real estate and really understanding all the nuances. Mm. I got a real estate license, went to all the schools, I went to all the seminars, I went to all of the meetups, I did all of these things to learn all the different techniques. But when you really understand that it's a marketing and sales to really start building the bank account, that is your cash machine. Yep. That is your funding partner that allows you to go out and build the portfolios and to do all those things without having to pay as much stupid tax as I did.
Oh, dude.
Right?
Yep. 100%. And that's one of the things. I'm pumped we're talking about this topic of that the business is a marketing business, because even going all the way back to my journey at the start, when I decided what the heck I wanted to do as an entrepreneur, I was looking at wholesaling. I was looking at being a landscaper. I was looking at all these different things. And the one commonality between all of them that popped up to me is, so what skill set can I learn that's going to help me in all of them?
Yep.
And it was marketing.
That's it.
And once I stepped into learning marketing, getting amazing at marketing, dude, you can start to kind of write your own check then, because you can adjust the business or the product you're marketing and selling if you master that skill set. So I'm sure we'll dive into what that looks like to master those skill sets for you guys in the wholesaling business.
I love it. And just to clarify how to find opportunities, and I don't want people to think of like marketing and sales as this big monster that they don't understand. It's just conversations and making offers, essentially, is what it all comes down to. And really, there's three avenues to be able to do that, right? You can build a reputation where people send you referrals, right? With real estate agents, with friends and family, with other investors, you can do that. You can prospect, right? You can pick up the phone and talk to people. I've been thumping my chest and getting as loud as possible with my megaphone, as much as possible about pick up the phone and just talk to strangers and solve their problems.
It makes it so simple when you say that too.
Right. Like,
that's one of the things I want everyone to recognize, is as simple as Brent makes that sound to talk to people. Mm-hmm. Literally yesterday I was talking with one of my team members in Carrot. So a different type of business, right? Not a wholesaling company. And we were behind in some goals. And what I literally say, I'm like, how many people have you talked to today on the sales team?
That's it.
And they go, well, six. So go, well, your quota is nine or whatever. Just talk to more people.
Yeah.
I love it. So guys, it is that simple. Doesn't mean it's easy, mm-hmm. but it is that simple.
Third way
yep.
is marketing. Mm. Marketing. And this is what I think is really, really interesting. It's something that I've really peeled the layers back mm-hmm. over the years. Is because I always thought you could just build it by being prospect. Just yep. just call as many people as possible, text as many people as possible, knock on as many doors as possible, mm. and you'll build a long-lasting multi-million-dollar business. Yep. Let me tell you right now to everybody, it's not going to happen unless you do marketing. Yep. It's not going to mm-hmm. happen.
Yep.
You will run out of people to reach out to. Mm. You need people to reach out to you.
Yep.
It's the absolute fact because I've tried it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to just say that because this is theory-based. I have had teams of 15 cold callers going at one time.
Yep.
I've had dozens of people texting at one time. And you run out of road. Mm-hmm. There has to be a point when people are reaching out to you.
Yep.
There absolutely has. Now, when you're getting started, I highly suggest you be as proactive as possible. I highly suggest that you try to, if you don't have a huge budget for this business, then trade your time and skills. Mm-hmm. For you know the budget yep. that you would need to be able to do it. But once you're able to get to the point where you have a budget mm-hmm. and you have the skills of sales,
yep.
and I don't want people to think sales as like some sort of slick salesman.
No.
I always think of sales as service.
Yep.
And we were talking about it before the show. Mm-hmm. How do you be unapologetically curious with the person that you're talking to yeah. see if you can solve their problem?
Yep.
That's what sales is. That's all that sales is.
Yep.
The whole sell me this pen thing, mm-hmm. right, from yep. Wolf of Wall Street. The answer to that is how long have they been in the market to buy a pen?
Yep. And do they even need the pen, right?
Exactly.
I think that's one of the big things that people miss with that analogy is, and they think sales can be a sleazy thing, is if you're trying to sell something to somebody that they don't want or need,
yes.
and you're using underhanded approaches to do that, then that's not good sales, no. right? But if you have a product that you truly believe in that you know can solve their problem, deep down in your heart, you know, I have something that can truly help this person out of their situation. Mm-hmm. It's actually your duty to sell well. Mm-hmm. Like your duty is to sell well because I've heard this analogy where, you know, pretend you have the cure to cancer. We were just talking about cancer right before this. Mm-hmm. We're seeking those things out right now. My dad was diagnosed with a grade 4 or stage 4 glioblastoma, mm-hmm. a terminal cancer. And so believe it, if someone came to me with the pill and said, hey, I've got this thing, and they were a bad salesperson or they were hesitant on selling me this thing that
right.
could actually cure it. Dude, that's the worst thing in the world,
yeah.
right? If you have something that can truly help somebody and you hold it back by not presenting it in a way that makes it compelling and helps them out, that's actually far worse than any sleazy salesman out there, I think.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do with every podcast yep. and every YouTube is to give people permission to have the conviction mm-hmm. to go out there and yeah. solve the problems of these property owners and yep. feel great about it. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, our income is only equal to the amount of value we provide. That's it.
Yep.
That's the and I say it a bazillion times, and I'm sure everybody's sick and tired of me saying it on this podcast or YouTube channel, but it's the absolute truth.
Yep.
So if you go out there and you find an opportunity that makes you $50,000, that's the amount of value that you provide. Mm.
Yep.
To the marketplace, yep. whether it be to the buyer, to the seller, to a combination of both, mm-hmm. to the title company, to the hard money lenders, mm-hmm. to everybody that's involved, the contractors, everybody gets an opportunity to make income from this because we sourced it.
Yep.
And so there should be wild conviction, wild energy to go out there.
Yeah.
People are like, Brent, you have so much energy. Yes, I am absolutely there's so much conviction that I have yeah. behind this business. One, it got me out of really dark times and really a tough spot. But two, I'm able to do this with my friends. I'm yeah. able to do this with my family. They're all part of my company. Oh, and yeah. it's just the absolute best business ever. Plus, I get to have freedom of schedule. We mm-hmm. talked about that. You know, I don't work in it anymore.
Yep.
Jackie, my operations manager, my lead manager, runs everything. My acquisition managers, disposition managers run everything. And I get to just make sure that I give them enough opportunities to yep. win. And that's the Dude. Point. That's when it gets really exciting. 100%. But you cannot, let me circle the wagons here. You cannot do that without marketing.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. You were like, okay, listen, I'm going to build somewhere where when prospects land on this site, mm-hmm. they're going to put in their information.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And let me kind of take everyone on a journey on how I even came to that,
sure.
right? Because You mentioned, Brent, at the start of it, when you're new, you just get going, right? I call it hamster wheel marketing. Mm-hmm. It works. You get immediate feedback by picking up the phone and calling or knocking on the door or doing it. It immediately works. The challenge with that people run into is eventually they want to get off the hamster wheel, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually they want to take a break or go on vacation or they've been grinding on that thing for 2, 3, 4 years. They've got enough consistency going in their business, but they're like, I'm ready to buy back some time now. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to have that flexibility that Brent just talked about. But everybody has to start somewhere. And I always suggest start with hamster wheel marketing because it gives you immediate feedback. You can get quick deals, but have a plan for the long term on how you can get off of that and either put team members on the hamster wheel for you and or build marketing systems that are what I call evergreen.
Yep.
And the same thing happened to me way back in the day. In 2007, 2008, I was learning how to be a marketer just from scratch. And the best thing to do, y'all, to learn how to be a good marketer is to follow good marketers. You can take training courses. You should read the books. You should do all those things. But the best thing is I would recognize what made me buy that thing. Like I would save the things I would buy and I would read through it and go, oh, they position it this way and that worked there. And actually, it wasn't this video on Facebook that sold me the thing. It was actually a piece of content that they created Yep. that built value. And then it brought me in, built trust. And then they went over here. And so on the marketing side of things, one thing I want to have people make a mindset shift for, just like you did in the sales side, where sales is not selling the pen to someone who doesn't need it. It's having a service you're convicted in, offering them the opportunity to solve their problem with that service and then making it easy for them to do so, right? Reducing resistance in the process.
Yep.
Marketing is the same. So where a lot of people with marketing, they use marketing that actually is kind of like a hard sell, right? They use marketing that is like a guy named Dean Jackson, amazing marketer. I remember this probably a decade ago. He had a podcast episode where he called it Cheese and Whiskers. You ever heard that
no,
one?
No, huh?
So he's good friends with Joe Paulus. Joe's here local in Phoenix. And that concept over 10 years, or probably 15 years ago, made it click for me. I go, okay, cheese and whiskers. What does that mean? He said, all too often as marketers, we're marketing with whiskers. Pretend our client or our prospect is a mouse. Mm-hmm. And what is a mouse after? They're trying to get the cheese on the other end of that that maze.
Yeah.
And so he said, as a marketer, we're coming in there with whiskers, which is the cat, and it's scaring away the mouse. And what are whiskers? It's coming in with sales breath, but in marketing. It's coming in saying, I've got a product to sell you right out of the gates in mm-hmm. my marketing. Versus he said, why don't we give them cheese instead? Like, what are they actually after? They're after cheese, which is the solution to their hunger. And you go, okay, well, what does that mean to our marketing? We then adjust our marketing to give them the value of what they're actually looking for without the sales pitch up front. And I'll give you two examples here. So one that Dean used in that podcast episode from years and years ago was a real example of a client of his. It was a restaurant in town, or he was going after marketing for restaurants. And one way that they could market for restaurants is market directly to restaurants and say, hey guys, we have a marketing program that can help get you more people into your restaurant, da 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 da.
Yeah.
They sent those emails and those letters to say, hey, you looking to get more clients? We're a marketing agency that can help with that. The response rate was low because it was whiskers. Hey, we have something to sell you. We think we can help you, but we have something to sell you. The opposite thing he did then was lead with cheese. Mm-hmm. He sent emails and direct mail that basically said something effect. I'm gonna butcher it a little bit, but could you use extra diners at your restaurant? Just mm-hmm. a simple email.
Yep.
Right. And of course they're gonna say, yeah, we would love to use some more. Have some more. So there's still just cheese right there. Then he basically walked them down this path in a series of one or two other emails that just 100% gave them exactly what they wanted without the selling. How do we do that in real estate then? Rather than going out there with a Facebook ad or going out there with something that just says, hey, quick cash offer on your home, which those do work. Mm-hmm. So that's a part of our mix. We might come with a piece of content. We might come with a video on Facebook that educates on, you know, the downfalls of working with an agent to sell your house or something like that. So start with education, meet them where they are, mm-hmm. build that trust. And then, oh, by the way, we've got this thing that can actually solve the problem. Yeah. So we can dig into more examples later.
Yeah, but why does Carrot, why do when people land on Carrot, mm-hmm. why do they put their information in? What have you learned over, what is it, 10 years?
Yep, yeah, 10 years with Carrot, like you said.
Like your whole focus, guys. Trevor's whole focus is to get people to put their information mm-hmm. in on,
yep.
on the site.
Yep.
Right? 100%. It's our job to go and convert them. But the site's job, by the way, 150,000 deals last 5 years, 30,000 deals a year.
Yep.
How?
It's like, a lot of
how
deals,
did you, dude. How did you build? I mean, why are people putting in their information on your sites versus other ones?
The first thing here, Brent, this starts way back 2010 when I started to learn online marketing. And the thing with online marketing that I found is oftentimes people lead with the wrong ask on the website.
Okay.
So I'll give you the example, specific one in this space. Okay. When we came into the space in 2012, 2013, 2014, closer to 2013, what most people were doing on their websites was at the very top of their site, they were giving away a free report.
Yeah.
Right. It was, get this free report and 5 ways to sell your house quickly and da-da-da. When you think about it, no one wants a free report. Like the seller does not want a free report. They want a darn offer, right? That's what they're after.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what people think is the free report is this small ask that gets them to the offer. In actuality, if you are hungry and you go up to Chick-fil-A and you pull up and they say, we've got this amazing free report on how to get rid of your hunger with this cool chicken sandwich. I'm like, no, I just want to buy the chicken sandwich, mm-hmm. right? So we just flipped it and said, well, what the heck does the seller actually want? They want an offer. So then over the years, we started to adjust and test the messaging. And I'll give you a couple examples, Brent, that people can look at. If you look at websites in this industry today, kind of what's become standard, right? Get my fair offer, get my fair cash offer, yep. get my offer on the button. That didn't exist before Carrot came along and we tested into it. The buttons before said submit mm-hmm. or continue mm-hmm. or something like that, right? And so we were looking at it going, well, with any type of marketing or sales, the ones who can get the highest conversion on marketing and sales are the ones who reduce the resistance the most. Okay, the more resistance in the sales and marketing process, the lower the conversion is
sure.
because every point of resistance, whether it's the button is too small or it's too hard to find, or the color of the button versus the rest of the website and the button in the area doesn't stand out, so my eye's not drawn to it, that's resistance. The wrong words in the wrong spot is resistance. Sending people from a Google ad to a squeeze page versus what we call a mini site mm-hmm. is resistance, because if they're going to Google and they're searching out a solution to sell, they're actively trying to find a solution. When you go to Google, you're information seeking. A squeeze page in our industry, we've found actually converts a little bit lower lead to deal and click to lead. But on Facebook, that's not the case. Facebook people are not in information searching mode. They're in distraction mode. So a squeeze page works better on Facebook. So
sure.
that's the first thing, Brent, is over the last 10 years, we always asked and we run tests every month. Where are there points of resistance?
Mm-hmm.
Now where we are in this space, people are testing and they've been testing it for years, like Open Door, just address, right? Just address that reduces resistance. There's always a balancing act though. What's the lowest resistance to get someone to move to the next step while you're also getting the most amount of quality of information to actually be able to help them or to follow up with them?
Yep.
But dude, it's removing resistance. The next thing I think, Brent, is actually getting in front of the flow of people who are already there
mm-hmm.
and recognizing back then in 2012 that the internet was just going to grow, that people were more and more going to go to the internet to solve their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you tend to, in a new medium, people tend to test it out in low risk environments. So when the internet first came out, people were hesitant to buy a product on the internet, right? But they would put in their email address to get a free report or to get something.
Sure.
And then they had to take this leap of faith.
It's more trust.
Yeah, to spend $10 to get a book. Now that's something that's just baked into our normal psyche. So 30 years
now
ago.
Now we buy stuff off of TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. And 30 years ago.
We might not get it.
No, yeah, 100%. And people probably wouldn't have put in their address 30 years ago into a website.
Right.
Because it's a giant financial decision.
Sure.
But we saw that future of the internet just growing. We said, well, how do we get in front of the flow of the most motivated people who mm-hmm. are actively searching at a solution and then reduce resistance once they get there to get them to take the next step?
Love it. So once a lead comes in,
mm-hmm.
How fast do we need to respond to that lead?
As quick as you possibly can. You probably know this better than I do on the sales side, right? Because now it shifts from marketing to sales. The second the lead comes in,
mm-hmm.
ideally our marketing has pre-framed the conversation in the mind of the prospect. And here's a couple things I'm gonna seed in there that have been big for our clients here. So yeah, the longer period of time after an opt-in, of course, the lower the conversion is going to be on the lead to sale.
Right.
Especially for those searching Google.
Right.
Because they're actively seeking out a solution, right? And so, because we have all the data, we'll oftentimes see the same person opting into 3 Carrot sites on page 1 of Google in Cincinnati within 20 minutes of each other, right? So when people say, we'll hop on with someone who's doing Google pay-per-click and they're like, dude, I'm getting leads. I've got 25, haven't closed a deal. The first thing we ask is, how quick are you following up?
Yep.
They go, quick. They go, how quick? Dude, always within 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not quick. So ideally within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, some people might say
I want people to understand that when you get an internet lead, you need to, in your mind, think of it as somebody's calling you.
There we go.
And you need to answer the phone.
Yep.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we go over every Friday on this big board behind us with our scoreboard for the week is how many calls came in and how many were live answered.
There we go.
And it needs to be like 95 or above or, you know, we have problems.
Yep.
And the second one is how fast do we respond to a pay-per-click lead?
Yep.
And that's what that we're focusing on, pay-per-click. And it's night and day.
It is.
I mean, if something comes in like at 1 a.m., you know what I mean? We never get a hold of them.
Yeah.
If something comes in and for some reason it's like Friday at 7:30 and we're having a team dinner or something like that, or we don't get to it within like instantly, they're gone.
Yeah. And a lot of people might ask the question, well, shoot, if they're so competitive, why should we even do online leads, right?
Because they're amazing.
They're amazing. They're the highest profit per deal.
Easily.
They're the highest conversion usually, right? Yep. You're always going to find outliers, but they tend to
I would say this. I wouldn't say in my business they're the most, like the highest return on investment, but they're the biggest deals.
Exactly. Because you got to pay for the paid ads. So that that brings your return on investment down versus like your network.
Not only that, but you know this as well as I do. Business is about momentum.
Yep.
Business, right? You're growing or you're atrophying, right? I mean, it's just is what it is. And when you get leads from marketing, especially from your website, they're ready to sell now.
Yep, they're ready.
I mean, it's like a 30-day sales cycle from the time that you talk to them to the time that you get paid on these, as opposed to more prospecting or referral-based, which is closer to 90 days. So if you need business now, you know, to keep your acquisition managers going and to keep the appointments flowing and to keep your cash buyers who are chomping at the bit going, you need, I mean, marketing has to be in the mix.
Yeah. And the way I like to think about the paid side of things, Brent, is, well, people ask, well, dude, I'm just doing direct mail or I'm doing cold calling. Do I need online? There's a couple things that we've found that actually are key if you're doing offline marketing. The first one is all offline marketing drives online demand.
Yep.
Okay. So people are gonna take out their cell phone, and we're even finding people that are sellers that got a text message, a cold text or a cold call. And when you get three or four calls from that same number, what do you do? I go, I don't know who this is. And sometimes I'll go to Google. Go, I'm just gonna see who this is. I'm not gonna answer the phone.
Right.
Or if it's a text message, sometimes I'll go Google. And depending on what comes up, even for your tracking phone numbers that you're using to call or text from. That can be a negative or a positive marker on your credibility. And so what we like to do is we like to look at what is all the offline marketing you're doing, including texting, cold calling, everything. And what may someone go to the internet to search to find you or to see if you're legit? It's all the phone numbers you're using. It's your company name. It's anything that's in there. And then literally go to Google and type that into Google. Type in your company name plus your city or the phone numbers you're using and see what comes up. And ask yourself if a seller saw this, would this actually help me to build trust and credibility, or would this hurt me, or is it neutral? Yep. And if it's neutral or hurting you, I guarantee you're losing deals. And if your average profit per deal is 12K, using a number we talked about before, how many of those $12,000 deals are you okay losing because of underperformance?
Well, here in Phoenix,
on the
it's
website?
Like $30,000.
There we go.
Deals. Major cities, it's $25,000 to $35,000 deals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's huge.
It is. And so that's the decision, guys. It's not do you want to do online marketing or not?
Right.
It's the internet is the central place of our credibility these days. That's where people go to see if Brent is legit.
Yep.
Right. They go to the internet, type up Brent Daniels Reviews, Wholesaling Inc., and you guys will find that he is because everything on there crushes it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you guys need to then do the same thing for yourself. The second part of the online equation, the first part is all offline marketing drives online demand. So having a well-done web presence the right way is going to help you win back deals that you're losing. You don't even know it. The second part of it is I like to build the foundation of my marketing. That's the way I do my marketing. But others, you know, are specialists in other things. You're a specialist in calling. I'm not. I'm a specialist in getting evergreen marketing coming in, but I go, I like to build my foundation with online and you scale with offline.
Yeah.
So if you're in a single market, you're not going to be able to scale as big as you may hope just with Google pay-per-click and SEO. You're going to get some great deals out of there, amazing deals. But then to really scale, you follow everything that you teach.
Yep.
You get the lists, you call the numbers, you do everything that Brent teaches to scale that out, marry the two together.
Well, I'm telling you, I've got four main marketing channels, right? I've got calling, obviously, with some unbelievable callers.
Yep.
I've got text message marketing, which has been absolutely fantastic this year. A lot of people think that you can't do that anymore. You can.
Yeah.
It's bananas. I've got the TV ads running, and I've got my
pay-per-click.
I've got my pay-per-click. But I'll tell you, pay-per-click is equal. The amount of income that I've made from pay-per-click this year is equal to the rest.
Yep.
And we're shooting for, I mean, we're really pushing Trevor to hit that $2 million this year in income. A million of that is going to be from pay-per-click.
There we go. There we go.
Seriously.
Yep. And so here's another reason why.
I am telling you, you cannot build a long-lasting, direct-to-seller wholesaling business without pay-per-click.
Yep.
You cannot.
Yep.
It's in. I'm just telling you, you're not going to do it with direct mail. You're not going to do it with Facebook ads. In my experience, maybe you know some people that have. Yeah. I'm talking long-term. I'm talking not just, oh, we had a great year in 2020 selling to the hedge funds or 2021 doing this. I'm talking year after year after year.
Yeah.
I just don't know any companies that do it without pay-per-click.
Yeah, and dude, there might be some people saying, well, what's going to happen with AI and Google search and all that? Is pay-per-click going to go away? It is for sure. This is probably 3 years ago I was kind of charting how I thought Google search was going to change. Now, I didn't know AI was going to come into the picture in the way that it did.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a part of that vision, but I was going, the search experience for a web searcher is just not, it's non-ideal right now because you do a search and then you see a page of, well, it used to be a page of 10, then you go to the next page. Now it's like you just keep scrolling and it's endless, right? And so they went from a couple ads in the side and the top to now four ads in the top usually. And so Google has a massive amount of their income coming from ads.
Yeah.
Massive amount.
Yeah.
It might be, I think it's their largest income source.
Oh, for sure.
So they're not going to be removing ads from Google search.
Yeah.
They're not going to be removing Google search. And some people have said, well, isn't ChatGPT going to eliminate people going to Google? I don't see a future in that anytime soon, because of the types of things I'm going to go to Google for versus ChatGPT for. So right now, someone does a Google search, they see a bunch of pages. The user is now forced to click on a bunch of pages to then determine which one they're most comfortable with and hope they make the right choice. What Google is testing with their generative AI, have you activated that on your Google deal? You can activate their generative AI search.
Oh, I'm sure.
So every time I do.
So the guy that runs my pay-per-click, I stole him from Google.
Oh, dude.
He was running all the Google ads. So he saw everybody's account, was looking at what was working from the marketing perspective to get him in.
Yep.
And so it's like a cheat code. It's been fantastic.
Huge.
Yeah.
And so if you guys haven't, you can go turn on their generative AI search results. And what we're seeing is now when I do a Google search,
we'll go ask them after this.
We should.
Yeah.
Not only does it currently show the current Google search results, but up at the top as this little box before the organic results that shows the AI results. And in general, there are patterns that are, some of the sites that are up in their AI results are some of the same ones in organic, but not always. And it's really being based off of trust and credibility. Do they have a good Google My Business profile? Does their website load quickly? Do they have information on their website that shows that they've been in business for a little bit, that they've helped some people? That's reviews. That's a good about page. Tells what you do.
Yeah.
That's getting rewarded. But what is not going to go away, y'all, even when I think the never-ending scroll of Google search results goes away eventually, the ads won't go away.
Yep.
That's not going to go away.
Yep.
So I'm still big on organic SEO. That's a whole different podcast topic on what I think is going to happen with AI and organic SEO. I'm making bigger bets there. But the ads, dude, are not going to go away and they're going to get even better, I think.
Yep. Awesome.
Yep.
Let me ask you about this, because you have a wildly successful company. You're a wildly successful entrepreneur. What do you do in the tough weeks? Because there are times.
There are, yeah.
There are times. There are. I mean, especially, I mean, listen, markets come, markets go, economies do what economies do.
Yep.
It's not always smooth sailing. So what goes through your head? What do you hold on to when you're having a tough week? Because there's people listening to this, watching this, And maybe they're working on their first deals and it just fell out. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just hired somebody and somebody just left them without even giving him notice and they have to scramble. Maybe somebody that was their business partner doesn't want to be business partners anymore or whatever. You know, like what helps you get through the turbulence of being an entrepreneur?
Man, this is a topic I'm crazy passionate about because when you get in entrepreneurship, you have this dream. Mm-hmm. That you have this dream that you see on the internet or whatever, working at your kitchen table in your underwear, whatever that dream is, right? And you go, man, once I hit this revenue number and once I have this business, all those problems I'm going through right now are going to go away.
Yeah,
I'm going to have money. I can get the fancy car. I can do this. I can do that. And you start to get into it and realize that that's not necessarily the case, right? And so I've got something, a concept I call the 3-year turn and burn cycle. And I'll answer your question directly here in a second. But what I found, Brent, and we work with a ton of investors, you know, high-level investors. We have a group called Epic that is our 300,000 to 12 million a year investors, and about half of them are doing a million to 12. Mm-hmm. And the pattern remains across all of them. Everybody goes through this where things in business break at threes and tens. Mm-hmm. So if you're just getting started, you haven't had your first deal, things are going to be hard, right? That's a zero, okay? But then $100,000, things break a little bit because you learn how to get some deals done. You have an inflow of deals, but you don't have enough money to go hire an employee full time.
Right.
So you've probably got a VA there, maybe a part-time EA, but you're just hustling. You may not even quit your job by that time. So you're probably working a job still. You crack the 100K and you're going, now how do I get more consistency with this? How do I leave my full-time job, right? And so that's the first thing that pops up is number one, you have to know that there are levels in business and there's what I call pain lines at those threes and tens that you will hit. Mm-hmm. At the $300,000 pain line, now you have some revenue to go hire somebody, but you don't know how to delegate effectively. And if you can't learn to delegate effectively, you cannot consistently stay over 300K in revenue.
Right.
And there's certain things in I call it my entrepreneur freedom formula that literally spell out at each level. Here's exactly what you need to do. Here's the pain line you're going through. Mm-hmm. Here's the exact thing you need to do to get over it. The $1 million pain line is next. That one's a little bit different. It's a consistent business. Now you're out of your full-time job. This mm-hmm. is your full-time job now. Mm-hmm. And you started to hire a person to take over the things that you're good at that are producing revenue, but drain your energy, mm-hmm. right? So if you don't want to be accountable to all the sales calls, but dude, you're good at it, but you don't want to have to wake up and have them all on your calendar, you probably need to bring someone in to help you with sales like you've done, right? So you replace yourself in things that you're good at that produce revenue, but drain your energy, and you start to build out that team. I can keep on going from a million to three, 3 to 10, the whole thing. But that's the first thing, Brent. For me, recognizing that there are levels in business and mm-hmm. things will break. And your business, as long as you're wanting it to grow, will never be fully fixed. So that's the first thing I realized. That you go, okay, I'm signing up for, at that time, I called it the pain train. Mm-hmm. But I go, no, dude. Like business is the best possible personal growth tool I can ever imagine.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I haven't gotten off the entrepreneur, you know, cycle is even though I'm fine money-wise, right? I don't need the extra money right now. It's because it's the best way that I know of for me to grow. Because once I hit a pain line, once I hit that $10 million pain line, dude, it was hard. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of hard weeks, hard days mm-hmm. where I wanted to do one of the three things that we do when we hit the pain line. We sabotage, we want to sell the company, or we get comfortable going backwards. We say, man, it was way more comfortable back here at 3 million or 5. What if we just did that? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, that's a pain line talk in India. So once you know the levels, then you know that it's coming and you can plan for it and you know it. Yep. And then you position it, like we were talking with my dad's cancer diagnosis. The next thing, Brent, was positioning it as growth for you. This is done for me, not to me. Mm-hmm. I'm a man of faith, and as a few years ago, me and some buddies memorized James 1. It's, dude, such amazing text, whether you're a believer or not. It's such amazing text. And in there, the verse specifically says, count all trials as joy. Mm-hmm. Because those trials, and I'm paraphrasing now, make you perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. They build your faith. They build steadfastness.
Yeah.
Those trials are good for you.
Yep.
Without the trials, things get boring. So trials are good. They're going to help you build. Those bad weeks, guys, you're getting better. Recognize there's levels, things are going to keep breaking. It's your opportunity to learn, grow, and fix them mm-hmm. to become a better leader, a better human being.
I was rereading Ray Dalio's Principles, and he says that pain combined with reflection equals progress.
There we go.
Right?
Yep.
And in the Rhino Tribe, one of our mottos is progress, not perfection.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I think that speaks exactly to what you're talking about. It's never going to be perfect.
No, it's like working out, right? I know you work out. If you don't have your muscles hurting sometimes, you're not actually growing. You're maintaining.
Well, it's when you push past failure.
Exactly.
It's when your brain's telling you stop and you keep going that you really hit it.
Yeah. You squeeze the extra rep out, even though it hurts.
And that's a physical thing, but it relates to building a business for sure.
Yep.
You know, because complacency is easy, because as humans, and they've done this a bunch, right? They've done a bunch of psychological testing and they go, what is the amount of money people have to make before, you know, so that they're not no longer in survival mode, no longer in hungry mode. Yep. It's like $80,000.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep. It is.
So you have to have an extreme vision and an extreme why, or you're going to keep sliding back to that.
Yeah. Dude, let's talk about that a little bit, because that's one of the biggies right there with staying in when the things are hard. So let's go back to the levels again. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's about on the 3-year turn and burn cycle, I find that about every 3 years or so, people are going to go through a cycle where they hit burnout, where they're getting bored of their business or whatever. And I'll say why here. So let's say you start a wholesaling business, right? You get your first deals done, you get to 300K, you might even get to $500,000 or whatever in that 3 years. And it's not new anymore, right? And the original vision, the original purpose that got you to go in the first place and get motivated to get up and get on TTP and get in Wholesaling Inc. And engage is you're usually trying to run away from something.
Yep.
Okay, we're trying to run away from something we don't like. That is the vision at the start usually.
Being poor?
Yeah, I don't like my job. I don't all that stuff. I don't like my job. I don't like the income ceiling that it has. I don't like that people are saying I can't do this. I want to prove them wrong.
Yep.
Any and all of those things are your motivation. As soon as you've left that and escaped that motivation, what happens is about 2 to 3 years in, right? That vision no longer is relevant for you anymore.
Right.
This is where people, they're in a mastermind or whatever, and they come and they go, man, I'm not really liking my work anymore. It just seems like it's not exciting anymore. It's routine. You know what? I'm going to become a coach or whatever the next thing is, because they think starting something new is the answer. And starting something new is not always the answer. Sometimes it is, but not always.
Yep.
And I would even venture to say that most of the time, starting something new is not the answer.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is, rather than getting distracted at that 2, 3, 4 year mark and that old vision isn't relevant anymore, we need to cast a new vision. And about every 3 years, we should be casting a new vision or refreshing our vision. I call it adding fuel to your vision, just like in a car, right? You're driving a car and you put gas in it, it's full, you're good. Dude, you're driving, you're going, you're not even really thinking about it. It's propelling you forward. You know where you're going on the map. But then somewhere along the way, you get this little indicator on your dash that says, hey, you've got 40 miles left, right?
Yep.
What do? You get an indicator that reminds you that you're almost out of fuel. Then you go fill up. You're all pumped again. Now you can go for another 400 miles. The challenge is, in life, we don't have a dash light that tells us when our vision is out. So that dash light for me is the indicators that jump up to say, well, how do I know when I'm not enjoying things anymore? It's usually when you're not pumped about a vision that's carrying you forward. It's you say too many days or weeks in a row, dude, I'm not excited to do the work today that I created for myself. It's when you're not pumped up about the vision. It's when you're getting distracted and trying to find everything to do other than the work that you've created for that business. And those are my barometers. Like, dude, too many weeks in a row I've said I'm not excited about this. It's probably because my vision isn't clear enough or exciting enough. I need to refuel that vision.
Love it.
So recognize that's your dash light if you're in the grind.
So how do you refuel a vision?
Yeah, so the way that I refuel the vision, and dude, this is what I've been on this jam for like 5 years, documenting the way I think about business in the Entrepreneur Freedom Formula, is recognize, number one, that you just do it every 3 years. It's pre-scheduled. Okay. You don't do it when it's painful.
So you know when the 400 miles is getting close.
Yeah. So it's okay. You do it pre-scheduled. So you make sure that every 3 years or so, I like the 3 years, you refuel the business vision.
Yep.
Okay. Now you should look at it every year. You should adjust it. You should mold it and shape it, but it should be a written document that shows, here's where we're going. Here's what we believe in. Here's the values that we believe are true. Here's the mission we're on. We're trying to beautify this part of town, or we're trying to do whatever, or I'm trying to help my whole family become, you know, independently wealthy, whatever your mission is. Okay. But then the next thing that a lot of people miss on the vision is they'll make business goals, but they'll forget to be clear on what they want personally. Mm-hmm. They forget that there's a relationship between business and life. That business isn't life, business should fuel life. Meaning, you should actually have a personal vision first, right? Mm-hmm. You should be clear on what the heck you want.
Yeah.
And that's a whole process I call a vision story. You do the 20-year, 10-year, 5-year.
And this has worked for you?
Oh, dude, I've been doing it for 15 years. I still have my very first ever personal vision story. I think I even have my active one in my bag somewhere. I'll get it out and read it.
Yeah. Is it laminated?
No, dude. It's in an orange carrot notebook. It's like 6 or 7 pages of written.
Yep.
And every New Year's, I'll pull it open.
Love it.
And I'll read it again. I read it every month today. But I'll go, is this still relevant? What parts aren't? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll flip the page and I'll just rewrite it all. And in 20 years, what's the ideal average day look like? Ideal average day. That's not the best day in the world, right? Like if you love Metallica and you're like, dude, oh, it's going to a Metallica concert, partying with them afterwards. It's not that day.
Yeah.
It's the day that if you had no choice but to live this day for the rest of your life, mm-hmm. it'd be pretty darn good, man. Yeah. Like you'd love it. And so the reason I like to do 20 first is it breaks limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. Because if oftentimes we'll dream only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, mm-hmm. when we dream close up, it brings so much of the past with us, the limiting beliefs with us, the things that haven't worked with us, or even the things that have, but that's all that we know. So then our dreams won't get big enough. So when we go 20 years out or whatever you want to do, we start to break them. And I just say, I'm not going to write how any of this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Probably most of what I'm putting in here, I have no clue how it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to write what that day looks like almost minute by minute.
Love it.
I wake up. And like, what's the first thing I see? What's the room look like? Is there a window? What's outside that window? Who's next to me? What are the first conversations I have? What do I have for breakfast? What does the kitchen look like? Who's out there with me at that time, 20 years out? I've got a daughter who's 13, a son who's 11, and another daughter who's 9. Where are they at? Mm-hmm. I literally write that in my vision, where I think they're going to be. And I go all throughout the day. What time do you start work? Where do you go to work? Do you work out? Do you work out alone? With who? Are you walking to work, driving to work? Who's at the office? What's the office look like? What type of work are you doing that would pump you up every day, that gives you energy all the way till I go to bed? And then you do the same thing at the 10-year. If that was going to be my life in 20 years, what's the 10-year look like? And do the same thing. Ideal average day all the way through. Now the 5, and I'll stop here and toss back to you. The 5 is critical because this goes into your business now. Mm-hmm. Now I go to the 5 and go, cool. 5 years, I'm 41 right now, so I'll be 46. And so in 5 years, here's what that life is going to look like. What would my ideal average day have to look like to live the 10, to live the 20? Mm-hmm. This is where you start to think about work a little bit more clearly. Mm-hmm. You go, okay, so if that's going to be my life, something's got to change between today and my business in that 5 years.
Yep.
If I don't want to be working in it in the day-to-day, I need to hire someone to lead the company. Or one of mine years ago, Brent, I wrote down in my 20-year vision story 10 years ago that I would own many companies, but not work in any of them.
Sure.
I would invest in them, but I would be mentoring and coaching CEOs. I'd acquire some companies and start some, but none of that day included me working in any of them.
Right.
And so as I was looking at my 2010-5 about 5 years ago, I go, oh my gosh, I'm still running this thing in the day-to-day. This is 3 years ago. I'm still running this thing in the day-to-day. I don't even know how to acquire a company. I've never acquired one before. And so I'm looking at that and going, now this is going to change my business plan and business vision for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. We went out and acquired a company. I hired a COO, hiring executives to plan for that vision. Your business vision should support your life vision, not the other way around, y'all.
Love it. Cool. There is a saying that I didn't understand as a young man, but is 100% true in my experience.
Yeah.
We always overestimate what we can do in 1 year and underestimate what we can do in 5.
So true, dude.
100%. I am telling you, that has got me so many times, so many times. Mm. And then you look back in a 5-year plan and you're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is further than I ever thought it could go in 5 years. And it wasn't just that 12 months that we put in our mind. It was like being consistent and focused. And it's the absolute truth. It really is.
And dude, on that too, I remember, and hopefully this is some encouragement for everyone watching and listening, my first year of entrepreneurship. So I graduated college with a marketing and entrepreneurship degree, not having any clue about what either one of them really was.
Sure.
And going out to the world and say, I'm going to give myself a year to start a company. So that's the first little tip for anyone that's newer in their journey. Give yourself a real timeline that's realistic and do not waver on that timeline. Don't quit before then.
Right.
Don't give yourself 3 months or 6 months, or I'm going to try this TTP thing out for a couple quarters. Yeah. No, a year.
Yep.
I'm committing a full year to this. And if I can't make it work after that, then I will decide what to do the next year, a full year. So I made that commitment. Number two, as I was going through that, I wrote goals down. I wrote an income goal, which at that time I thought was huge. A guy making no money is $4K a month. I wrote it down. I put these up. So write them down and get them somewhere in front of you. But I remember, Brent, I didn't hit that 4K anywhere near that year. I started to get some things that were working for me. Mm-hmm. So then I said, I'm gonna re-up my commitment for another year.
Sure.
We then moved probably a year and a half to 2 years after that. I got frustrated with those at those goals in the wall that I walked by every day because I wasn't hitting them. I was behind in almost all of them. I crumpled it up one day, threw it in a drawer. And I'm like, those are actually demotivating to me in this moment.
Sure.
And so I went on, kept on grinding, kept on doing some things, got things working. We moved. And I remember pulling out the drawer, this drawer that I had shoved it into a while before that. And I go, that was my goal paper. I still have this in my office today. Mm-hmm. And I uncrumpled it and looked at it. Every single one of those goals that I had written on there, I had hit
yep.
the year and a half after.
Yep.
So don't stress it or pressure yourself, guys, if you haven't hit that revenue goal. Because like Brent said, you might overestimate what you can get done in a year. But as long as you're clear in that vision, you're clear on why you want this thing, stick with it because it will come true as long as you stick with it.
Yeah, listen, being around successful people, listening to these podcasts, watching YouTube videos, meeting people that are doing incredible things, give you motivation.
Yep.
And that is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you have to combine it with discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because discipline will take you places motivation can't.
Oh, man. Yep.
Without a doubt. And that's what really what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just staying disciplined to it
and
just sticking with it. And even though, I'm motivated and I'm writing my goals and these are big, hairy, audacious goals and this is crazy and I'm going to go for it and you got to really push. And if it doesn't make you cry, it's not worth it. And if it doesn't make you nervous, it's not worth it. And all of those things. Yeah. Absolutely. I love it all.
Yep.
Just stick with the discipline with it. Just understand that it'll work every single time if you do.
One thought, and dude, feel free to cut me off at any point if we're running at time, but one thought that pops up on the discipline side, because by nature, I'm not the most disciplined guy in the world. Like I've got to structure things around me to kind of short circuit my lack of discipline sometimes. And the thing that pops up for me that I wish I would have learned and kind of internalized far sooner was I was living in this, what I call if-then complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, I learned that from an author years, probably 2008 or nine, but the if-then complex, man, if I achieve this thing, then I will finally do these things, right? When you're living in the if-then, it's always if-then, because you hit a goal and you move the milestone, you move the bar. And a lot of my daily habits were things where I'm going, man, I can't really work out every day because I don't have the time for it. I got to do all these business things to get revenue going. But man, once I get this revenue, then I'll start working out every day.
Yep.
Or man, I don't have time for date nights with my wife, or I don't have time to read every day, or some of my daily habits I have today.
Mm-hmm.
And after hitting so many of those levels I talked about, the threes and tens, hitting the 300,000 a year, then a million a year, then 3 million a year, then 10 million a year and going above, you realize, like I'm never going to get to those unless I prioritize them now.
Mm-hmm.
And so a piece of advice for y'all watching or listening is write down your 5 daily non-negotiables.
Yep.
The things that help drive forward your life and business, but also that give you joy today, right? Not the things that you have to wait for. And my 5 daily non-negotiables literally require no money.
Yep.
It's a text message or IGDM 5 people a day. I love connecting and I love creating.
Mm-hmm.
I get joy when I connect with people like
sure.
this. So message 5 people a day. That also drives business, which is the cool thing. So you could be
talking to people?
Talking to people, exactly. So at least 5 a day, right?
Yeah.
And you might have a different number. That's
imagine
my number.
Imagine if it's 50.
There we go. Exactly. So the next thing is I read 10 pages a day, every single day.
Non-negotiable.
Right there, because you grow from it. Next thing is I sweat every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's something that gives me energy. I look forward to it. It makes the day great.
If I
read 10 pages, I messaged 5 people and I got to sweat in before 10 a.m., dude, the rest of the day is amazing. I don't care if something blows up later in the day.
Sure.
I at least started the day off great.
Yep.
And I've got a couple others in there that round out my 5. But write down your 5 that if you look at that day, even if you didn't hit your goals that day, you're like, I moved forward. I grew. And you know what? This day was good because I baked the things in that make me happy today.
Yep. I love it.
Cool.
Carrot.com.
Carrot.com.
Carrot.com, guys. If you're interested and getting into, and you're ready to start marketing, and just if you're ready to add credibility to your business, grab a Carrot site, carrot.com. Trevor,
yep.
Thanks for being on here.
Man, I appreciate it big time, Brent. And guys, I'm so passionate about what, like, the passion Brent brings, because when someone brings excitement and passion on a topic like Brent does, number one, it's magnetic. Like, people are drawn to you.
Sure.
But also number two, you guys are at the right spot. If you're looking to crack through and get the first deal or the first, you know, 100,000 or the first million even, you guys are at the right spot. Not only does he obviously know his stuff, but he's just one of the best dudes in the industry. And I'm grateful to have you as a friend, and also a partner as far as we share customers and help people get where they want to go.
Love you, brother. Thank you.
Guys, keep with Brent and Wholesaling Inc.
Awesome. That's it, guys. And just as a side note, Rhino PPC. We're opening this up this month, Rhino PPC. I am sharing my Google genius, Jesse, with the world. And it's going to be limited to a certain amount of people in each market, obviously, to get the most out of it. And if you've got 5,000 minimum would be the minimum a month that you're going to be spending in marketing for internet leads, go to rhinoppc.com and check it out. And that's it. As always, I encourage you guys to go out there and talk to people. Till next time. Love you guys.
That's all for this episode. Your next step to success is to continue the conversation over at WholesalingInc.com by joining the mailing list, as well as get your chance to book a strategy session to learn the systems and become part of the tribe and work personally with one of our amazing coaches. We'll see you next episode with more ways to make you a fortune in wholesaling.